You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. South Dakota lost a political icon this month. Former U.S. Senator Tim Johnson passed away on October 8th at the age of 77. Johnson never lost an election. After working in state politics, he served as our U.S. representative from 1987 to 1997 before moving to the Senate to serve from 1997 to 2015. He was also the last Democrat to hold statewide office in South Dakota. Today, we remember a bit of the life and legacy of Senator Tim Johnson with our Dakota political junkies. We'll also look forward to the upcoming election and a conversation about Initiated Measure 29. Jonathan Ellis is co-founder of the independent news journal, The Dakota Scout. Tom Dempster is a former South Dakota State Senator.
This was a really fitting tribute to Senator Johnson, I thought. I mean, his two sons spoke at length about what kind of father he was, brought out that personal side. He was a very devoted family man. Stories about how he always went to their events. Brendan Johnson had a funny line that he never missed family dinners and he never missed church. And he had a rule for the kids that if they were too sick to go to church, they were too sick to watch television. So that was the family side of him. And there was probably more of that than the policy side. Senator Daschle talked a little bit about that and how and their friendship over the years. Representative Herseth Sandland talked about how she'd gone from being an intern to running on the same ticket with him a decade later and just some of the things they got done in Congress. And you know, I think that his influence, when you spend 18 years in Congress, or I should say 28 years in Congress, because 10 of that was in the House, and you spend as much time on the Appropriations Committee as he did,
sure.
The influence that Tim Johnson has had on this state is being felt and will be felt for generations.
Yeah. Senator Dempster, memories of U.S. Senator Tim Johnson.
Well, it's a wonderful thing at your funeral for the introductory prayer to say he holds the people of South Dakota in his heart.
Mm-hmm.
Notwithstanding Jonathan's comments about making dinner and always being there for dinner, the dinner that Senator Johnson made his kids would be two pieces of bread and a piece of cheese and microwaved.
That was how he made grilled cheese sandwiches.
If that was insufficient, then we had Raisin Bran for breakfast. So what's the problem with Raisin Bran for dinner?
Yeah. So they wanted mom to cook, is what you're saying in general.
Well,
Barb put on a great meal.
I think that would be a requirement. But here's what I saw over and over and over again. I saw Tim Johnson as if he were standing in a field in the middle of South Dakota. And here's what Tim Johnson would say. A blizzard? No problem. A drought? Oh, there will always be next year. He had a resolve that no matter what came his way, he would take on. Traditionally, of course, he would be a stoic, wouldn't he? He would carry with him a simple acuity that I understand was absolutely extraordinary, that if he knew something, you wouldn't necessarily know that he knew it, but he really knew it and was very, very bright. What I saw during that entire ceremony was Senator Johnson standing in the field as if he were in a Harvey Dunn painting, a man of indomitable will. Again, the farmer standing in his field. Oh, I see your roof blew off last night. Oh, well, we can fix that. But yet a man where no means no and yes means yes. The thing that also really hit me is it's an extraordinary thing to have a Senate seat taken away from you. Larry Pressler lost to Tim Johnson. Larry Pressler was there. It's an extraordinary thing for John Thune to lose a Senate race at 6 or 7 o'clock in the morning when the results of the election on the Indian reservations was released, and he had won the election before he now lost the election. John Thune was there. And that just really impresses me with these are politicians, these are South Dakota politicians, they're men of the soil, they'll take all comers, no means no, yes means yes. It was really impressive.
Yeah, lots to remember about his legacy, people of both parties there, Governor Kristi Noem there as well, she worked with him. So the influence, Jonathan, that he has on people of all parties probably will be remembered for quite some time, even if you didn't agree with his policy, for example.
He was one of a politician who never came across as inauthentic. And I should point out that I pre-wrote an obit. In our industry, we pre-write obituaries for important people. And so in doing the research for Tim Johnson's eventual obituary, you know, I talked to Joel Dykstra, the person he beat in the 2008 race. Again, said very, just a very respectful guy. So even his competitors, you know, Larry Pressler, John Thune, who were there, you know, paid their respects to him.
Yeah.
He was authentic in a sense. And Michael Card, USD professor, who I have on as one of your guests, mm-hmm. you know, one of the people I interviewed for the obituary said he was sort of that last of a dying breed who moved his family to Washington, D.C., stayed, you know, they stayed in Washington, D.C. because that was a more collegial atmosphere back then. And yet he still was able to keep that South Dakota authenticity.
Yeah. All right. Speaking of the politics of the future, let's talk about what's coming up, because the election is, what, like 2 weeks away. Now we are on the home stretch. Things are going to get ramped up. And in my world, even though we've been doing stories on every ballot question since, you know, for months, people will now start asking me, so what is amendment what? So to that point, some people are just starting to pay attention, and that is okay. Welcome aboard. Let's talk today about initiated measure 29, because this is recreational marijuana. Jonathan, the last 20 years, according to the Pew Research Center, the public opinion on marijuana, medical and recreational, has shifted a lot. What we don't know is how much it's shifted in South Dakota. But this isn't the first time that people have been asked to show up and speak up about how they feel about marijuana. What do you want to lay out historically, Jonathan, that you think is relevant for listeners today?
Well, the third consecutive election that a recreational marijuana has been on the ballot. If it doesn't pass this time, the sponsors say we're basically done. Point out that, you know, how has opinion shifted? 2006 or 2008, I believe there was a medical marijuana initiative on the ballot. It came very close to passing. And they did a repeat there, and there had not really been a campaign against it. So then the next election, there was a repeat. This time, the Medical Association put a ton of money into defeating it, and it went down pretty easily. And so that had been now then over a decade before, you know, we get that back on the ballot in 2020. And medical marijuana is something that was pretty overwhelmingly supported. So in that decade plus, I think a lot did shift. The recreational is a different deal for some people, mm-hmm. For a lot of people. And I'm shocked that it's gotten as close as it failed the last time. It did pass the first time, and that was overturned by the Supreme Court because it violated the one subject rule. And it maybe passed. I mean, the argument that the opponents had for taking it to court maybe was because voters were confused. It had, you know, had hemp, it had medical marijuana. But anyway, that's the history. So no doubt that opinions across the country and even in South Dakota have definitely softened on illegal marijuana. You know, mm-hmm. they don't want people put in jail for it. They don't want law enforcement necessarily resources diverted for that.
Right. All right, Tom. It's a very simple question, really. It's the regulatory framework of how it will be regulated would be up to lawmakers.
Eventually,
if it passes.
Mm-hmm.
What do you see in this ballot question that you find interesting politically?
Here's what I see in this ballot question that is fascinating politically. Every voter needs to know that he or she is making a Faustian choice. He's making a contract with the devil. And the devil is this. Do I want increased access to marijuana for my children and for my grandchildren? Or do I want them exposed to felony charges in South Dakota? Jonathan talks about the marijuana question being in South Dakota for 10 years, and indeed it has been. And about 10 years ago, I was in Italy. At Lake Como, we had a Rotary Youth Exchange student that stayed with us for a year. We fell in love with her, and as a result, we went to her wedding at Lake Como. And there was a big convention at that hotel, and it was a marijuana convention. And the guy that I talked to at that marijuana convention looked at me, and he says, you Americans, He says, you're just so crazy. Because 5 years ago, we started looking at this, and we're going to take another 5 or 10 years to take a look at it, to understand all of the consequences, all of the cost and everything about legalizing marijuana. You Americans, what you do is you just do it. And so what we've done is we now have 24 states in the United States where marijuana is legal. South Dakota is one of 4 states who has the most extreme penalties, a felony for your children or for your grandchildren.
I'm going to jump in because I'm not sure if people think that marijuana usage is the hellmouth that Faust is going to get dragged into at the end.
Say that again.
I don't know that the Faust, that moderate, legal marijuana use that's regulated, labeled, and available in a dispensary is really a deal with the devil. I'm not sure how many people would agree with you on that, even if they don't want this measure to pass. I'm not sure how many people think it's as extreme as maybe...
As I stated that it is.
I don't know.
It's fascinating because the New York Times just had an in-depth article in talking about the consequences of increased marijuana use in the United States. And in Aurora, Colorado, for example, almost daily, they say, here comes another one. THC levels in today's marijuana is 99% as opposed to 5% of what it used to be. Those people, according to the New York Times article, who use marijuana in excess are all going to have some problems with psychosis and schizophrenia, so on and so forth. So the question is, same thing is true with alcohol. Use it, don't abuse it, or do you want to face a felony charge?
Jonathan, what would you add to this?
Well, it's an interesting conversation. For one thing, I didn't read the New York Times story. There's a lot of competing studies in this area, and caveat is that they're funded by people who are, you know, by groups who actually absolutely oppose marijuana, and they're looking for anything they can. They're funded by pro-marijuana groups. It's really hard to find good studies that you can trust. I have seen studies that suggest that youth use actually went down in Colorado after it went. Now again, I'm from Colorado.
I found that study too. So I mean, it is mixed results, and I agree with you. As I'm looking, it is.
It's just hard. It's
one of the muddier places because it's fairly new. Because it's hard to put a ton of money into researching. How are you going to research marijuana use upon kids in a, you know, peer reviewed journal? right? You're not going to. There's some ethical barriers to. And there's been some societal stigma to researching it. So a lot of the research is difficult to sort through, is what I'm saying. It's kind of hard.
This is a result.
Nobody says it's good for you.
Right. Nobody
says excess use is good for you. No one's arguing that. Yeah, to be clear.
This is a result, though, of our frankly insane federal drug laws for decades that you couldn't do research. I mean, it was very tightly controlled by the DEA, any type of research. That even included in the medical field too. So yes, to your point, Tom, about Europeans saying you're crazy because there was no way to really study this stuff. Yeah. But let me give you go back to the policy side of this really quick because I was having some conversation, some communications with a public official, an elected official today, about this bill, about a story I wrote about a property tax ballot measure being approved for circulation for circulation. And my point of the story was that there is a property tax revolt coming if lawmakers don't figure something out. And it's not unusual for our system of governments, I said this on X today, to not actually deal with problems. They get so out of control that something else blows up, something else comes along. And let me give you an example. Republicans had an opportunity during the 2000s to deal with spiraling healthcare premium costs. They did not do a thing, even though there were ample warnings that this is going to blow up on you. And thus it does with the Affordable Care Act in 2010. Because they didn't deal with it, something else big happens. This is going to happen with property taxes. Now, going back to marijuana, the proponents here will say, yeah, 24 states, and not one of them want to go back. You're not hearing, let's go back. And I'm going back to Colorado. I haven't looked at the data recently, but I will say that legalization did provide a lot of money for schools. So if you're looking at property taxes, you're looking at perhaps giving counties some consumption tax ability with alcohol sales. You're not going to get some of these things without a broader tax package, and that has to and probably would include property taxes. If you throw cannabis taxation in there, I mean, you're talking about probably some pretty decent revenue.
We don't know.
This would be up to the legislature.
Right. This is going to be up to the legislature because right now we do not know if this could be taxed.
The legislature. I mean, we interviewed the framers of this, and they intentionally want it taxed. And yes. They've intentionally tried to make this as simple as possible, so to give the legislature a lot of latitude to color in the dots there.
Which legislature, Tom? Because it's not going to be the seated legislature right now. Let's say that the consumables tax repeal passes and recreational marijuana passes, then that's going to be decided by the people who take office in January.
Indeed.
Will there be a special session where the governor would say, no, I want the legislators from last session to make decisions? Will there be pressure for that? Any political gamesmanship that happens after the election day before January with our current governor and the current makeup of the state house?
So we don't yet know on the consumables tax, whether that's a $128 million deficit or a $650 million deficit. We have no idea what a 1 or 2 or 10% tax on marijuana use would generate. It certainly isn't going to be any number between $128 and $600 some million. It's going to be a very, very difficult legislative session if these measures, particularly if sales tax passes or user or consumable taxes pass. It's going to be a very difficult legislative session, and it's going to require some really smart, capable people.
To Jonathan's point, many of the ballot questions that we see are things that that lawmakers have had an opportunity, even the abortion amendment. I anticipated that we would see abortion legislation, some kind of compromise that would come out of peer ahead of the public vote to try to get ahead of, like, this is what we think a good South Dakota solution is to this question. That did not happen. I was wrong about that, and it's on the ballot now. And voters will decide based on how that particular ballot question was worded. So I think your point is really clear right now that there's a way to do it from peer, and there's a way to do it on the ballot, and those two things can clash, but it has to be... There are questions that have to go to lawmakers then in January.
Meaning that if you don't take care of these issues during the legislative session, the people won't take care of these issues.
Or if people don't like, referred law, if people don't like how you took care of it, they will refer it.
They will refer it. Yeah.
People will have their say.
Yep.
Should we leave it there?
Well, it's a wonderful thing that they do and that they will.
Right. It's a wonderful thing that they do and that they will.
Yeah, I would just say there are too many lawmakers, and this goes not just at state politics, but back to the federal level, that haven't dealt with immigration issues for decades. They don't deal with these things. They don't want to pay the political consequences for it. And that's, you got too many people who are just too wedded to those jobs, and they're not willing to make the tough decisions because they don't want somebody to run against them on it or something. So this is a weakness of our democracy.
And a strength of our democracy?
Which is a weakness of our primary system being the most important.
Hard pivot.
Can I excuse me very much? Thank you very much for that opportunity.
I will open the door for Amendment H before we go. We should tell listeners, if they don't already know, that you are very pro-Amendment H. How would the primary system address what we are just outlining here with people not making solutions because they won't get primaried in the same way?
Sure, because that's the reason that people are frozen, in fact, and can't do anything, because they've got to go back to their constituency, which in South Dakota would be 17% of the voters, and they have to make it through that thicket of extremely ideological people in order to be reelected and make it through the primary. That's wrong. 17% of the people should not make the decision on who gets elected to office. The 70% of people who vote in the general election should. That gives us the capacity to really solve some problems.
How about, let's wrap up with the new polling numbers. None of us have been able to dive into it super deeply, but is there anything from the South Dakota News Watch and Cheeseman Center for Democracy / Mason-Dixon polling and strategy? Anything from those numbers that you're seeing at first blush, Jonathan, that surprises you or that confirms something that you were already thinking about how the electorate is feeling 2 weeks ahead of the election?
Well, with regard to the numbers of IM29, which is what we were focusing on here, the the numbers have switched. I think, what is it? They have 51% no versus 44% yes. Yeah. Those numbers have switched from an earlier poll that was done in August, September, internal poll that I was privy to that had it passing. But that is before a really hard negative campaigning came out against that. So that I would submit that the campaign against legalized marijuana is working for the opponents.
Yeah. Anything that stands out to you, Tom, that you want to leave us with from these polling numbers?
I think surprises all around, and yeah, we'll see what happens in the end.
All right. Some of them are too close to call. Yeah. So 2 weeks, we keep pushing toward the election day.
Let the people vote. Right?
Let the people vote.
We've got a lot of races that are too close to call all across the country.
That was Jonathan Ellis, co-founder of the Dakota Scout, and former state legislator Tom Dempster.